Welcome to another CineStories podcast. I'm your host, Brian Dick. Before we get into my conversation with writer and Movie Bites founder, Frederick Minch, a bit of business. First, we're now accepting submissions for our first ever TV digital retreat that will be held in Idyllwild, California in the spring of 2016. Early deadline is June 1st, but we'll be accepting submissions into the fall. Second, this is CineStories' 20th anniversary. In an effort to financially assist writers who earn invitations to our retreats, we've launched a 20 for 20 fundraising campaign where we're asking everyone who has enjoyed a positive CineStory experience to donate just $20. Hopefully that's not too painful, especially since we're a 501c3, making all donations tax deductible. Now onto the podcast. My guest today is writer Frederick Minch. Frederick has been a writer for over 30 years and also founded MovieBytes.com, the internet's most comprehensive database of screenwriting contest info, with a free weekly newsletter that goes out to more than 21,000 email subscribers. MovieBytes has been a wonderful supporter of CineStory through the years. But today, we're speaking to Frederick, the writer, whose movie Nightingale premieres Friday, May 29th on HBO, and it stars David Oyelowo. The reviews coming in have been nothing short of amazing, with Entertainment Weekly calling it their must-watch of the week. Enjoy the podcast.
Hello, this is Frederick.
Hey, Frederick. It's Brian Dick.
Hi, Brian.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Do I sound okay?
Yeah, you sound okay. That seems... You're not even coming in hot either. So I think hopefully this will work. This is my first time to do it over Skype. The other time was just in person. But
right.
So well, thanks for taking time with me, because I know it's probably a busy week for you.
It's been a busy and exciting week for sure.
And were you telling me that they had a premiere out here last week?
Yeah, they did on last, I can't remember what day it was, Wednesday, I think the 13th, they had a little premiere at the London Hotel in West Hollywood.
Very nice. But that, the movie actually premiered last summer, right, at the L.A. Film Festival?
Yeah, the first, it premiered at the L.A. Film Festival last June, and then, It took a while for it to get picked up by HBO, and now it's going to premiere on May 29th.
Okay, well, maybe we'll get some into some of those details down further in the podcast. I just sort of like to start with talking about your life as a writer, and you know, I'm always interested in hearing that moment or when you thought writing was the thing that you wanted to do.
Okay.
Did you always just love movies? You know, did you write short stories and then transition into screenplays? Where did you fall in love with the craft of screenwriting?
Have we talking now?
I just try to roll into it. I don't, you know, this is okay. we're not very formal.
Okay. in high school and stuff, I would do the school plays. I loved acting. I loved going on stage, even though I was really shy. I felt like I could assume other identities on stage, and it was really fun for me. But I had sort of a limited amount of talent in that area, to put it mildly. So I started writing, and I found that I had more talents there. I got better reaction to my work as a writer, and I loved movies. You know, I just loved them. I am a man of a certain age, you know, so I grew up in the 70s. So the movies that I grew up on are, you know, Taxi Driver and The Conversation and Apocalypse Now and The Godfather and, you know, all these Chinatown, all these tremendous movies that the studios were making, you know, back in those days. And, you know, so I fell in love with film at that time. And then that became what I wanted to do.
And did you go to school for it?
I did. I went to NYU and studied filmmaking back in the late 70s and graduated in 1980.
Excellent. Was your degree in screenwriting, or is it just a general filmmaking degree?
It was a filmmaking degree. They didn't. I think nowadays they have a dramatic writing degree or something. But back in those days, it was just filmmaking. You studied filmmaking.
And did you ever have dreams of being a director, or writing was just always the focus?
No, you know, I did. I mean, like everybody, I thought I wanted to be a director. But that was one of the really valuable lessons I learned in film school, is that I do not have the disposition for directing. You know, at NYU in those days, and probably now, they have a very rigorous course that you take your first or second year at NYU, and you direct, you know, a lot of films. And I was like a deer in headlights when it came time to direct. You know, there's just so many decisions required of you in such a short time. And for me, it's like, I'm quite certain that I could make excellent decisions on all the questions that are brought before me, but I would need, you know, 2 weeks to make that decision. And that just wasn't available to me. So it was much better for me to stick to writing screenplay.
When you graduated school, did you stay in New York, or did you ever make the trip out to California and work out on the West Coast?
Yeah, after, I kind of regret this decision, actually, but after film school, I left New York immediately and came right to Los Angeles. So immediately following graduation, I flew out to L.A. and got started.
It sounds like you don't have much love for L.A.
Well, you know, the reason I regret it is that I didn't have the maturity to handle it, so... I came out there and I wasn't a very, you know, well-formed human being. So I was kind of off track, in the sense that it's such a company town, you know, everybody you talk to is in the film business, and, you know, it just got my head turned. So I started feeling like, you know, I got an agent right away. You know, that was never a problem. I had referrals from my folks in New York, and I got an agent. I was taking meetings, but I just wasn't mature enough to handle it, and all of that stuff just made me want to please those people that I was meeting. And, you know, so I started to write this kind of screenplays that I thought they wanted.
Right.
And those were not the kind of screenplays that I have a talent for. So, you know, that was back in the early 80s. So, you know, like Steven Spielberg so I'm writing Steven Spielberg comedies, or, you know, family adventures or whatever, and that's great if you have that kind of sensibility, but I really didn't. But, what I had was a certain amount of craft, so which is kind of a bad thing, in the sense that it got me, I got encouraged for writing those scripts, even though I didn't really have that sensibility. So I got, you know, I had agents, and I had, you know, I was able to option some of those screenplays, but I was never able to get them produced because there was something that was just not right about them. You know, there was something inauthentic about it. That really isn't where my passion was. And I think people sense that on some level. And so I got encouraged enough to continue doing it, but not encouraged enough to make a living.
Right. And so at that time, so you were doing some specs, and you were also, you landed some writing assignments with studios or production companies?
No. I mean, I had some, you know, some assignments, but never for studios, and it was just hand to mouth stuff that never amounted to anything. So I did option in a couple of screenplays, but again for very little money.
And so how long did you last in LA?
I lasted for about 6 years before I just felt like this is not working. You know, I'm not happy, and I'm not doing good work as a writer.
Right.
And so a friend of mine from high school was working at a dog track in Dubuque, Iowa, and he said, "Come on out, and, you know, we'll spend the summer, you know, working at a dog track." So for the next 10 years, I wound up working at dog tracks, writing tip sheets for dog tracks, which is, you know, sort of a weird tangent to go on.
And at that time, were you still writing scripts, or had you kind of just completely washed your hands of it?
I was writing scripts, although I kind of drifted away from it and started writing fiction. So I wrote some short fiction. I wrote a novel about dog racing. It was never, I always felt like screenwriting was really more where my heart was at. But, you know, it was just, I needed to get away from it. I needed to get away from LA anyway. And then, you know, after spending like 10 years doing this dog racing stuff, I got married and I sort of needed to get respectable. So I started doing some programming stuff. I picked up some programming along the way, and so I got more respectable gigs. And I got married, and I had a couple of kids, and then the nature of the stuff that I was writing kind of changed as time went on, because I became more of a grown up. I knew what I had a point of view of what I wanted to write about, and so the nature of the scripts, ironically, now I had kids, now I was no longer interested in writing about Spielbergian fantasy adventure or whatever. I started writing much darker, more independent kind of screenplays, and that actually is much more where my sensibility is, and consequently, I think I've had much more success getting people to respond to the material.
Right, and when did you come up with the idea of Nightingale, or what was the inspiration behind that?
Well, there's a sort of a couple of kinds of inspiration. Just creatively, there was a case nearby here. I live outside of Chicago, and there was a murder near my home, where a man was living with his mother, and he killed her, and in that case, he actually decapitated her and put her head out on the front porch. Yeah. So I was that was a story that obviously made an impression. It's like a house that I walk my dog past every day. So, you start thinking about what's going on behind closed doors in these houses that where you don't know your neighbors. And so the story I wound up writing turned out to be quite different from that, but that was the initial inspiration. And then I'd actually also written a screenplay, in which a character, like the Peter Snowden character in Nightingale, he was a supporting player in a different script I had written. And that was actually the script that I took to CineStory.
Okay.
Those two things. But then there was another layer of inspiration, which is that I had sold an independent indie satire a few years previous to that. And it's a script that I'm really proud of, and it's a great script. It's got a lot of good reaction from actors. We've always been able to get good people attached to it. But, we've just had a heck of a time raising the money to get it made. And it's not a big film. It's like a $3 to $5 million film to do it really, really well. But we couldn't raise the money. And so I was just at a point in my life where I really wanted to get a film made.
Right.
And so I started thinking, well, how can we reduce the obstacles? How can we just eliminate as many obstacles as possible? And I thought, well, given my sensibility, I'm not going to be able to do this by writing a blockbuster. So let's go the other direction and write something that's so small that if necessary, I can finance it with a credit card and make it myself. And so I thought, well, let's make a one character, one location drama and see where that can take me. And as it turns out, it turned out to be sort of the perfect indie script, because it could be made, for such a low budget. But it had a really splashy role, so we could attract an actor who would get the film some attention, which turned out to be exactly what happened.
And how did once you had the revisions done and you had it where you could do it, it had the one location, the one character. What was the next step for you? Did you get it into the hands of the director, Elliot Lester? Was there did you have an agent or manager that helped you get it around town? What was the next piece for you?
Well, I do have a manager, and I gave it to him, and while he respected the writing, he really didn't know what to do with it. It was it's not the kind of film that is easy to sell. But he had introduced me to some people around town, and so I gave it to an executive who I had met through some general meetings that I had taken when I was in Los Angeles, and he was working for Gore Verbinski's company, and obviously this was not an ideal fit for Gore Verbinski, but this executive liked the script, and so he came on as he was thinking about producing his own film, so he came on as a producer, and then hooked up with a director who had done a film, done one film and was looking for his next, and so we worked together for about a year trying to raise the money to do it, and it just didn't come together. And so after a year, we parted company, and then I decided I would try the Blacklist. The Franklin Leonard site was had been online for a few months, I guess. And so I thought, well, this is really an ideal script for the Blacklist, because I think the people who are going on that, the producers who are going on that site looking for material, almost by definition don't have a huge amount of money to spend. This is people going onto the Blacklist are unlikely to be, the studios. The studios, they got plenty of scripts. They don't need to go to the Blacklist to look for them. But the folks who might have some connections but not necessarily any money, those are probably the folks looking at the Blacklist. I thought because my script could be shot for so little money but could, potentially attract an interesting actor, I thought it was a perfect script for that venue. And then again, that turned out to be exactly right. I put it online I don't remember the exact day I put it online, but I put it online on like a Tuesday, say, and by Wednesday I had been contacted by Josh Weinstock, who is the producer who ultimately optioned the script and purchased it and made it. So, I mean, it happened literally in like 2 to 5 days, I'd say, I put it online.
And what year was that? Do you remember?
Let's see. Would have been like 2012, I think.
Okay. And then I always like to see how long this sort of these pieces are apart from one another. When was the initial idea about the story of the neighbor murdering his mom? I mean, was this something like a decade in the making, or was it a little faster than that?
That murder took place in like 2003, so that was an idea that was stewing around in my head for a long time. Because I wrote the script, I think, in 2010.
Okay. And so once the producer got involved, was David Oyelowo next? Or was the funding like cast contingent?
No. Okay. No. I mean, the producer, Josh Weinstock, brought the script to Elliot Lester, the director, within that first week. And Elliot just, he was very excited immediately, and he was on board. So then he went out and he knew some people who he thought might be able to finance the picture. And again, it happened within a week, I'd say. Wow. So by the time I put the script on the Blacklist, and within 2 weeks we had money. And it's not a lot of money. It doesn't need to be a lot of money when you're shooting one character in one location. But right. But we had that, and then we went out to actors, and there was another actor attached for a little while, and then he fell out, and then David came on board, and then we were shooting all this. I put the script online in February, and we were shooting in June. So within 4 months we were in front of the camera. So it just happened at an incredibly accelerated rate once the ball got rolling.
It's always so strange to me, because it always feels like you're treading through mud, and then all of a sudden you're on solid ground sprinting. It's just everything moves so slow and so tedious, but once a decision gets made, it just seems like it just flies.
Right, right. I mean, and that's again. I've been doing this for 35 years. I mean, get your mind around that. That's an absurd length of time. And so for all of this to suddenly like come together so quickly was really flabbergasting.
And so where did you guys end up shooting? Did you shoot in L.A.?
Yeah, we shot in Tarzana.
Okay. And where did you come out? Were you on set?
I was on set for like 2 days. We were shooting on such a shoestring that there really wasn't money to bring me out and put me up and so forth. So, but I didn't want to miss it. On the other hand, so I flew myself out. But it was such an intense role that David was he was in character the whole time, and he was emphatically not interested in meeting me or shaking my hand or anything. I mean, he didn't want me in the sight line. So I was, it's not that I was unwelcome, but I mean, he didn't want to, he didn't want anything to do with me. And I understood that, the producers were very apologetic, but it's like, I knew what the kind of role I had written for him was. It's just an incredibly challenging one, and I'm sure he didn't want to have the writer second guessing his choices. So I kind of, you know, I stood around for a couple of days and got the feel for it. But then, you know, there was really nothing for me to do at that point. They shot my script. You know, there wasn't any rewriting at that point. So I went home.
Well, yeah, you answered my next question, because I was wondering if once Elliot came on board, if you guys sat down and went through and rewrote it. But, you know, it sounded like you just went straight to it.
Elliot really loved the script. And, of course, I mean, there are things that you do to, you know, by way of production. And he had a lot of really good suggestions for things that we could cut. In terms of, you know, just he knew what he was going to shoot, and he knew that particular line of dialogue was not necessary or whatever. So, you know, we made a lot of little tweaks like that in advance of the film, but that was pretty much it. And then, you know, he shot the film, and, once you get the cut of it, then he realizes, okay, well, you know, we don't need this scene and a couple of other things. So there were some cuts, but there really wasn't any changes to the script itself.
And when did you see the first cut of the movie?
It took a while. Let's see.
Were they trying to make it get it put together before, say, like Toronto or LA Film Festival deadline, or were they just taking their times with?
No, I mean they got it. You know, we finished the shoot in June, and then they had it ready to submit to. I don't remember what the Sundance deadline is, but we did submit to Sundance and it didn't get in. And Toronto and Berlin and, you know, a bunch of other festivals that didn't take the script, didn't take the film. So, which was disappointing. You know, we really felt like we had something special, and we got turned down, you know, place after place until the LA Film Festival took us in. But, you know, that turned out to be a good place for us. I mean, because, you know, it's right there. So a lot of people who might not have seen it in other places were able to see it.
And was that when the producers connected with HBO for distribution? Was through the festival?
And it did. I believe it was through the festival. I'm not precisely sure who saw it first, but I think it was some executives at Brad Pitt's company, D.D. Gardner. I think maybe might have been the first person to see it, and they really loved the film, and so they thought, you know, that Brad Pitt might be interested in coming on board in some capacity, and so that we kind of went into a holding pattern while we waited for Brad to look at the movie, and so it took, you know, several months for him to finally see it, but when he did, he responded really favorably to it, and you know, he had been producing David's Selma, so they were working on that, and so he had a relationship with David, and he, you know, he loved the script, and so they came on board as executive producers, and they brought it into HBO, and that kind of greased the wheels to help to bring HBO on board.
And now it's premiering this week,
which was which is flabbergasting, because, you know, I wrote the film with just the expectation that by hook or by crook, I'm going to get this movie made. Case scenario was this is a little art film, and it's going to play for a week in Los Angeles and in New York, and then it will go to Netflix or whatever, and, you know, I'll have my film, and that'll be great. And that was my best case scenario. And then for all of this other stuff to have happened, and for us to be, you know, not just on HBO, but as an HBO, you know, presentation, it's really astonishing. It's just a great, great feeling.
I mean, yeah, it only took 35 years, right?
Absolutely. It was like overnight success.
So what's
but, you know, that said, I mean, I'm really glad that this is my first movie, as opposed to some of the things that I was writing, you know, when I first came to LA, which, you know, were not really my sensibility, and were not things that I would have been proud of 35 years later. This is the kind of film that I want to be associated with.
Yeah, it's always that interesting dynamic of, you know, do you write for yourself or do you write for the paycheck? And I, you know, it's,
right.
I know I struggle with that from time to time, and I've taken some jobs that I ended up loving because I spent time on it, but Yeah, there always seems to be a little more rewarding when it's a true baby of yours.
Right, right. Yeah, it's very gratifying to have, you know, you only get one chance to make a first film, so for this to be the first one is very, very gratifying.
Now, with this coming out, have you been approached to be writing other things? Are you in the middle of your next thing right now, or have you even had time to think about it?
I'm in the middle of my next thing.
Oh, okay.
But I have not been approached about it. There hasn't been like this, you know, my phone ringing off the hook or anything like that yet. You know, hopefully that'll happen, but I'm kind of, you know, I'm fine if it doesn't. you know, one of the things that has been, you know, the difference between me when I went out to Los Angeles after film school and me now is that, you know, after a while you become aware that the sun comes up and the sun goes down and all, you know, your life goes on, your kids love you, your wife loves you, and whether or not your movie gets made. So it's like once I became sort of comfortable with myself and my life, then I would certainly love to have a career writing screenplays, but I don't care enough lose my equilibrium over that. You know, I'm just not going to worry about that anymore.
Right. So you're not packing up the boxes, and you're not got the moving trucks waiting at the door after, you know, Saturday morning?
I do not. And, you know, frankly, I'm sure that's probably costing me some jobs because I live in Chicago, and I'm not available for meetings at the drop of a hat. And that's probably not a good career move on my part, but you know, this is where my stuff is.
Well, but before all this, how often were you coming back to LA, if at all? Because there's always that debate about, you know, should I live in LA? Should I not? You know, is it necessary to be out here?
I've come out once or twice a year, probably. You know, for the last 5 or 6 years, probably once or twice a year, for meetings or, you know, whatever, just to you know, show my face.
Right, right. So, what's next for you? Is it your indie satire? Is that your big hope to get that off the ground?
Yes, we're definitely still working on that. I kind of really feel like my sensibility is best suited for television. So I'm working on some television pilots. I think that's kind of what Hollywood was in the 70s, what the film studios were making in the 70s. That's what's happening on cable television now. So I think that kind of makes the most sense for me. Is the kind of small character-driven stories that I like to tell. It's really hard to get those made as features. So, but you know, that's really kind of what that's the bread and butter for cable television. So that's right.
Hey, are you there?
Still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I'm sorry. I dropped the telephone.
It happens.
Anyway, yeah. So that's the next thing. As a matter of fact, it's the script that I brought to CineStory. I'm rewriting that as a pilot and seeing if I can get that set up.
Yeah. For a second, when you know you dropped your phone, I thought maybe Marvel was calling on the other line. You were just like, I've got to go.
Yes, I'm moving to LA. Forget what I said. I'm moving to LA.
Oh, shoot. Well, when earlier you mentioned about how you studied programming, is that once you started doing that, was that when you came up with the idea of doing movie bites?
As a matter of fact, yeah. I had done some web development work. And my wife was having our first baby, and we decided, you know, that we wanted her to stay home with the kids. And so she was a school teacher, and so she was going to be staying home with the kids. We were losing that second income. So I was, you know, looking around for a way to replace that income, and I thought, well, maybe I can build a website that focuses, that does, you know, something for writers. And I thought that at the time there wasn't anything that really sort of collated information about screenwriting contests. So I thought that would be an interesting site that one person could do well. And so I started collecting all the information I could about screenwriting contests and put it on a website and turned that into a little business. And then that's been really successful. You know, it's been a nice second income for me, and I think a nice resource for the screenwriting community. People can go to one place and find out, you know, what screenwriting contests are coming up and what other writers think of those contests. So there's mechanisms to provide feedback about the contests that they've entered.
And when you were gathering all the putting that database together, was that when you came across CineStory?
I'm sure it was. Yeah, I'm sure it was. I don't remember precisely. Actually, I don't remember if MovieByte started in 1997. I'm not sure when CineStory came into existence, but probably around that time.
Yeah, we were.
I recall, because CineStory.
Yeah, this is our 20th year. So and it started in Chicago.
Right. I remember that.
And then I think it was in the early 2000s when Pam Pierce, the founder, moved to Idlewild, California, that we moved from Illinois to California.
Okay. Yeah, so it was around the same time, you know, MovieBytes and CineStory came into existence around that same time. That turned into a nice business, and it sort of kept me connected to the film industry a little bit in a way that I probably wouldn't have been otherwise if I had not been doing that kind of work.
Right. Well, Frederick, I think that's it for us. Unless there's anything else you want to relay to the writers out there. any nuggets of wisdom or bit of advice you want to leave them with?
Yeah, I don't feel terribly well qualified for that. It's like mine is not so much a success story as a cautionary tale. You know, this is what'll happen to you if you aren't careful.
Well, I think if anything, if you really love doing it, you can't be in it for the short sprint. You know, you have to be in it for the marathon. Otherwise, you're
right. I mean, I've been saying this to people. I've been doing this for 35 years, and if I could have quit at any point along the way, I would have. You know, it's like, who needs the aggravation? It's really kind of miserable work, but that's not an option for me. You know, this is just how I process the world. So I write, you know, it's what I do. There's really no option. So, I feel no, qualms about if, you know, somebody comes to me for advice, I just tell them, well, you know, if you're struggling with that script, don't write it. Don't quit, you know, don't do it. Don't put yourself through it, because I know perfectly well, if they're a writer, they're not going to listen to me. You know, they're going to do it.
Right. Or they'll quit for a month and they'll be doing something completely different, and they'll get hit with that. Oh, that's how I fix it. That was the problem with the script. You know, I should have gone this. You know, I should have zigged instead of zagged.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's just you have to put it in the time, but you can't look at this as defining who you are or you know, your success as a human being. It's not that, you know?
Right. Right. Well,
once you come to terms with that, then you become a better writer.
Right. Well, Frederick, I want to say congratulations. You've been a big supporter of CineStory through the years, and you know, we couldn't be happier for you. Out there to the world to see. So, hopefully we can talk again. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Brian.
All right.
Talk to you later.
Bye.